What are landlords' responsibilities? Let's find out, shall we?
Whether you're at the beginning of your property journey, looking to enter the market, or a seasoned professional seeking new strategies and insights, this podcast is your one-stop resource for all things property investment. Welcome to the Property Investors Network podcast. Let's embark on this exciting journey together and make your property investment dreams a reality.
Hello, my name's Mark Fitzgerald. It's great to have you joining me here as ever. So as property investors, we undoubtedly will probably end up becoming landlords. Now, whether you want to actually self-manage your properties or whether you're actually going to get an agent into managing them yourself or maybe even build your own team, there are some fundamentals that we need to make sure that we have in place so that we don't fall foul of any regulations that are out there. As I always say, we want to be the property professional of our industry and our area. So there are some things that we need to make sure that we've got in place. Now, there are some old school landlords out there or people who maybe don't 100% know what they're doing. That's not going to be us. And I'm going to help you with that here today. So if you bought a property and you're looking at renting it out, whether it's an HMO, whether it's an SA, whether it's a buy-to-let, you have to have, or you should have, the relevant insurance on that property. A, first and foremost, you want the right mortgage. Okay, so if you are buying a property to rent out and you're getting a residential mortgage, you're putting it on the wrong mortgage and you risk, obviously, the mortgage company saying that you've defaulted or you've lied on your mortgage terms and asking for the money back. But of course, if you're a landlord, you're probably going to be getting a buy-to-let mortgage. An HMO landlord will be getting an HMO mortgage. And if you're doing serviced accommodation, now there are mortgage providers that have the package for you to help you with that. But you want to make sure that you're getting the relevant insurance for the property as well. You can't just get the normal home insurance and expect it to work if you have a major problem. As a landlord, you want to have landlord's insurance. So you want to have insurance that cover for a buy-to-let or that cover for an HMO and so on. So do make sure that you are getting the right insurance in place, because it's your responsibility to ensure that the building is up to a desired spec, but also if something goes wrong with the building, you can get it fixed. Now, if you've got a pot of money and you don't want insurance, that's up to you. But I suggest that you do go out there and get some good insurance, okay? You want coverage, really, or insurance that covers between tenancies of up to 90 days, so that if their property's empty, you're still covered, because some will only actually cover you if people are living in the property. You want to also have cover that obviously covers theft, including the tenants and their guests, if there's any theft that goes on in the property or gets broken into. Offers loss of rental income is a good one as well. So you can actually get insurance that covers rental income. You can choose what works for you. But let's make sure that we've got that. Obviously, we have to make sure that the property is prepared in the right manner, you know, to be able to be let. So you have to have your carbon monoxide alarms, you have to have your smoke alarms, you have to have your fire safety in place, depending on the properties that you're having. So what I would suggest is, on that front, become a member of the NRLA, and they have loads and loads of advice. They have loads of checklists that you can follow to really help you maximize and set your properties up in the right manner. Of course, you want to make sure that you've had the relevant checks on the properties as well. You know, if there's a fire safety check, Legionnaire risk assessments, make sure that your EPCs are in place, because these are all things that you have to be able to show a tenant or somebody that's moving into your properties. You also want to get the most up-to-date how to rent guide. Now, they don't tell you when they update things on the how to rent guide. So if you printed off a few of those and you started dishing those out, chances are it won't be the most up-to-date one. And that can make it very, very difficult if you ever go to court proceedings and you need to get the tenant out. Whereas if you go onto something like the NRLA, you can download the most up-to-date one on that day and never get it wrong. So it's a great thing to be joining. It's the National Residential Landlords Association, a very, very good thing to join. Even if you're not looking at managing your own properties, because you can get legal advice, you can get all sorts of good things there. But if you are looking at self-managing, you can get ASTs on there, Section 21s if you need them, Section 13s if you want to increase the rents, just to make sure that you're doing everything by the book, of course. And that's what we always want to be looking at doing. Now, if you're looking at building your own property management company, or you're looking at doing a strategies like rent to rent, but you're going to be doing it with HMOs, then there's a few other things that you need to make sure you're a part of. And that is, one is you need to join the property redress scheme in case anybody ever puts a complaint against you or your company. So you need to be able to join that, and you need to make sure that you've got that in place. As a landlord, I think everybody should have this, and that is to be a member of the ICO for data protection purposes. It's about £40 per year, so it's next to nothing in the cost. And because you will be holding other people's personal information, you need to make sure you're registered with that. I would say register with that even if you're not going to manage the properties yourself. Why? Because chances are you're going to be talking to landlords or vendors. You're going to be holding other people's data anyway, even if it's just in a follow-up system. So make sure that you're protecting yourself. Make sure that you're protecting your business as you go forward, because we do not want to get caught out with little things like this. That realistically can end up costing you a lot in the long run. Equally to that, I would have a little look at maybe getting yourself some insurance. So I have professional indemnity insurance and I have public liability insurance on my property management company. You can have those as a landlord as well. And I would suggest if you're self-managing that you do have those insurances as well, either on you or on your business, so to speak. You don't get it on the properties. You obviously have the relevant insurance for that property and the cover for those. So do make sure that you are setting yourself up in the right manner. If you are taking deposits, you need to be registered with the DPS so that when somebody gives you a deposit, you put it safely into that government-funded scheme. And of course, everything is above the book then. It doesn't cost you anything to be a member of the DPS or any of the other ones out there that that I know of that are government-funded. So you can apply to those, you can put the deposits in those, and everybody gets the results that they need. They'll all be notified that that is coming through. So what else do people who are self-managing need to deal with and things? And a lot of the questions and things that get put to us are people that just aren't 100% sure about what they're doing. And that's why I say it's very good to be a member of the NRLA, because then you can ask them questions as well. So they have a very, very good help there. Remember, you've got to be the property professional that you want. So you need to make sure that you are doing that. And that also goes with taxable rental income. You've got to remember that you have to declare your rental income to HMRC. Rental income is, of course, taxable, and you should carry out a self-assessment to report the income. Okay, a PE worker would have to do this with the employee and things, but as a landlord, you may very well need to do this yourself. So seek the relevant advice. Obviously, get yourself an accountant in place. It is going to cost you some money, but it'll cost you so much more if you try to get around these things. Okay. So sometimes you might have a tenant who's moved into a property and they want to make it their own. So they want to decorate the property. And some people say to me, well, should I let them? And I think realistically, that's down to, you know, personal choice. If you're happy for a tenant to decorate the property, be sure to discuss the changes that they are looking at doing and making sure that what your expectations are from both parties. You know, if they're going to paint the whole house pink and everything, realistically, they need to know that if you're happy for them to do so, that they have to change it back before they exit. Okay. Sometimes it can be a very, very gray area. So do take the time, if you're not happy for people to decorate the property, that you both know what is expected and what is expected of the property when they move out. Now, sometimes on buy-to-lets, it is quite nice to let people put their own stamp of approval on the property and to let them decorate it themselves, make them feel that it is their property so they take better care of it. But again, be careful of the expectations on that. And you can even agree on colors yourselves, maybe something that you like. Sometimes it's quite good when a property becomes vacant. A lot of the times, landlords or investors will go straight in there, will give it all a good lick of paint. Sometimes it's quite good to stick it on the market and say, if you want to move into this property and make it your own, you can do, okay? But again, it's up to you. Now, another thing is white goods. If it is a buy-to-let property, sometimes there are white goods already in the property that the landlord either wants to keep responsibility for or would be quite happy to gift, what they say is gift possession. But you have to be a little bit careful with anything like that. If you are gifting possession of anything electrical, please, please, please make sure that it's been pat tested before you've done so, that it's safe to be used, okay? It's also got to be clear that this is gifted to the tenant and is their product. If you're using short-term tenancies, ASTs, before the tenant signs it, be aware of any items that you do gift to the tenant, because as they become in possession of these, it means that it's their responsibility. It's their cost if it needs repairing or it needs replacing. However, it also means that the tenant is free to take them when their tenancy finishes as well. So if you really want to gift something, you are giving it to the tenant. So it's not just their responsibility. If they move out and you've gifted them a washing machine and they take it with them, they are in their rights to do so. I've seen this before where a landlord said to me, I'm not going to actually pay for any of the white goods. I'm going to gift them to the tenant. And then when the tenant left, they were like, they've nicked all the white goods. They haven't. You've given them to them. So they are their responsibilities, but they could also take them as well. Another thing is rent increases. As landlords, you know, the cost of living's going up all the time. And a lot of people say, what forms should I use for a rent increase? Well, this is, again, where the NRLA are great because they have these forms there. You should be issuing a Section 13 notice unless your AST states otherwise. If so, you would need to follow the process outlined in the AST that has been put there and their clauses. But in most cases, it is a Section 13 for a rent increase clause. And of course, you can only do that once every 12 months. So you can't do it once and then think, oh, I'm going to do it again. Over the course of 12 months, you can only do one rental increase. Okay. So what I'm talking about a lot here is quite broadly for buy-to-lets, but also it can be incorporated into HMOs as well. Again, do seek out the specifics for the strategy that you're doing. Now, smoke detectors, smoke alarms should be fitted on all rental properties, as with a carbon monoxide alarm as well. And they should be checked at least monthly, realistically, weekly. I mean, how often people do is up to them, but this is what they should be doing. Now, if you go around and you inspect a property and the fire alarm or smoke alarm, should I say, is bleeping, some people say to me, well, who's responsible for that? Well, in a buy-to-let property, you pretty much say it's probably the responsibility of the tenant. They should be able to change a battery if the smoke alarm is bleeping. Equally to that, though, they should also notify you as the landlord or whoever is in charge of the property, a management agent, if it doesn't stop bleeping, if there is a fault with a smoke alarm, okay? So it is an carbon monoxide alarm as well. And we should get those replaced ASAP as quickly as possible. Now, what you will find is as an HMO landlord operator myself, you will find that every now and again, the cleaners or somebody or even a tenant might complain that a smoke alarm is bleeping or beeping in their property. I do send my team in, my handyman goes in and changes the batteries themselves. Why? Because we want to make sure that that is done. In an HMO, it can be quite difficult to actually get tenants to be responsible for smoke detectors. I've actually known one that's had it bleeping for a while in their room. In their room, I don't know how they slept, but never reported it. We did say you need to report these things and we will get it sorted for you, even if we just supply you with a battery and you can do it yourself. But I always make sure that with these alarms, that we update these alarms, that we make sure that they are in date because they do go out of date, and that they are all fitted with new batteries over a periodic time. Yes, it comes at a bit of a cost, but hey, we're in a business here to make sure that people are safe, okay? Another thing is out of hours. Some landlords say to me, I switch my phone off out of hours. They can only call me between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. You need to, as a landlord or a property management company, have a 24-hour service. Now, that could be you. You don't always want it to be you. And I would definitely say you don't want it to be you. But of course, you also want to have a bit of a guideline on that. What is or actually warrants an out-of-hours call. You know, if there's damage, fire, leak, gas leak, anything like that, there's certain things that they should be calling 999 for. Let's be right. If there's a fire, they should be calling the landlord. I actually know I have a friend whose tenant rang him up and said, the kitchen's on fire. He said, oh, my God, thanks for letting me know. I take it you've called 999. And they said, no, we thought we'd tell you first. He said, hang up and call 999. I'm on my way. Some people don't think like everybody else does think. So you need to make sure that they know. Basically, when people move into a property, give them, you know, a handbook. A property handbook for that property. Make it stupid simple. In these emergencies, you call the water board, you call the gas company, you call the fire brigade, you call the police. Anything else, you can call us, or you get yourself a 24/7 company that will manage all of the sort of maintenance checks or problems for you. But you do need a property manager. That's why a lot of people like to outsource this to management agents and things, or you need to have the relevant things in check. But also, your tenants need to know what is a major emergency and warrants an out-of-hours call and what really can wait. Or maybe just go on to an answer phone message for you to pick up and sort out tomorrow. You know, if it's potentially a bleeping fire alarm or something like that, just needs a battery change in, then, you know, we can get that done the next day. It's not a major problem. If there's a light bulb out, but there's more light bulbs in a hallway or something like that, then it's not a 12 o'clock at night, the light bulb's gone. It's a message to say the light bulb's gone. Can we get that replaced? Yes, we will do ASAP, but it's not always that you need to be woken up in the middle of the night for it. But of course, there are certain things that you do want to know about and you do want to be proactive on. But let's also just add to that, it's not something that you're going to have all the time. Well, depending on how many properties you've got. You've got hundreds and hundreds of properties, you might have a lot of these things. But then you want to have a dedicated service, VA, somebody who can take the calls out of hours on your behalf. And of course, do make sure that you are doing regular inspections as and when they should be done, that you have a regular or yearly, if nothing else, gas safety inspections on your boilers and everything. You've got the relevant certificates. You're doing fire safety checks as well, making sure that that's good. You're getting the electrical safeties, the EICR, electrical installation condition reports done. They need to be done every 5 years, of course. Pack test on your appliances. And of course, make sure that any regular maintenance is sorted proactively, and make sure your communication is good with the tenants as well, because a lot of the time relationships with tenants breaks down when they're just not heard, when they're just not, you know, replied to. So make sure you're replied to in a timely manner. You don't have to be bosom buddies and best mates with them, but just make sure that you are aware of the problems, that you've made them aware that there are problems and that you're getting those problems solved and sorted. So I just thought I'd jump in, do a bit of a Q&A, so to speak, with some of the questions that are coming across. A lot of people don't like to manage their own properties, and I don't blame them. At the end of the day, it's not the easiest things to do, but if you make a business out of it and you systemize it, it doesn't always necessarily have to be you that is the manager of your business. And of course, you can build a business out of this. Likewise to that, you can find a very, very good agent and let them manage it all for you. One thing I would say, and that is no disrespect of an agent or anything personally myself, if I did give my properties to an agent, I would be prepared to manage the agent. Now, that's not 24/7, but I would be checking in, making sure my inspections are done. I would also want written confirmation, pictures, updates. I would like to see all of these things sent in from my properties, and I would like to get off my own backside and do inspections with the agents as well. Why? For my own peace of mind, to see how my properties are being managed, but also to see what condition my assets are in, because there's no point in shutting your eyes, turning the blinkers on, letting somebody else do it all, and then 12 months, 24 months later on, turning around and saying, well, my property is now in disrepair, the ceiling's caved in, there was a leak going on. You were managing it. Yes, they should be managing it, but A, sometimes tenants don't tell the management agents. B, the management agents aren't always as good as we hope them to be. And I always see this as well with investors. What is it with us? How much are you paying for your manager? I only pay 8%. 8% a month. You expect them to be proactive and do a good job for 8% a month. Be realistic. If it's cheap, there's a reason it's cheap. Okay. Don't go for the cheapest agents just so you can maximize your profits. It'll cost you more in the long run. Go for somebody who I would actually go for somebody who's a little bit more expensive, because then I can demand more from them, because we are paying a premium for a premium service. That is what we try and deliver. And that is what I always look out for. So don't always go the cheapest, go the best route. Go with somebody who's got good testimonials, that does a good job in your area, and don't always just look for the cheapest when it comes to stuff like that. It'll cost you more in the long run without having to refurb the properties and things. So hope this episode's helped you. As I said before, if you need any help and support, then check out pinfurtherlearning.co.uk. Do make sure that you subscribe to the Property Investor Network podcast, available on all good podcast platforms, and of course on YouTube, and book on to your local PIN meeting. We have 50 PIN meetings, networking events up and down the country. Even if you've never been before, we will make you feel more than welcome. If you need any help, reach out into the PIN Facebook community as well. We are here to help and support all property investors to get and maximize their property investing journeys. You take care, and I'll see you all very soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Property Investors Network podcast. Remember, investing in property is not just about numbers and profits, but also about building communities and creating a lasting impact. You can do this by checking out our website at pinfurtherlearning.co.uk. And of course, look to book onto your local Property Investors networking event. We are here to help and support you every step of the way, and I look forward to you joining me very soon. Bye for now.